Positive Chats podcast up and running officially now for Friday, February 10th. And a crazy, over-the-top, excited today to introduce you to Dr. James Edwards. Now, he advises companies and trade associations and conservative organizations on patent policy. And he's also the founder and executive director of Conservatives for Property Rights. And it's a patent advisor for Eagle Forum Education and Legal Defense Fund. And he's got a bunch of things that are going on. And so excited to catch up with him today. James, thanks for joining us on the show today.
Chris, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Oh, my goodness. Thanks for spending a few minutes with us. Guys, it's kind of funny. I think this is one of those podcasts. By the time we're done, we are going to be so much smarter about stuff and probably really enlightened about a lot of things, because it feels like we don't talk about patents. That just isn't something when we come together with family and friends and say, did you hear the latest about the patents? TMZ ain't covering that stuff, James.
No kidding. Absolutely, they aren't.
So let's talk about your background a little bit and what brings you to here. And patents, it's such a, well, first of all, you're in Washington, D.C., is that right?
Yeah, I split my time Washington and South Carolina, but yes.
Okay.
That's where my work is.
So you are really in the knowledge and you're in the heart of all this stuff. We really are talking about things that, okay, I'm an inventor and I want to get a patent for this, and schematics and drawings and approvals and not approvals and all that stuff.
That's right. Okay. It's something that's been in place since 1790. It's gone through iterations and improvements over time. It was, as anybody with an inkling of American history knows, our patent system in the 19th century, the 1800s, and, through the 20th century was the leader of the world. It moved America from an agrarian backwater startup nation into, the world's leader, technological innovation leader. So we achieved not only that, but facilitated the creation of wealth, the creation of jobs and companies, industries, competition in all kinds of ways. So that's how America moved from 0 to 60 over a very short time, relatively speaking.
America was the world leader. Are we no longer, or are we in competition?
We're certainly in competition. I mean, China is a huge competitor. That's for sure. But, we are in competition with other countries as well. A lot of European countries are involved in patents in a large way in innovation. That's where, one of the COVID vaccine companies, I believe it was the Pfizer and BioNTech, a German company, and they partnered to quickly develop that vaccine, and it was out within a year, which is like light speed for any kind of a medical innovation of that sort.
And you mentioned before we really protecting the patents.
It's interesting. China is playing to win. We've kind of given up. We're resting on our laurels of the past. But over the past couple of decades, our patent system's been weakened by Congress, courts, administrative bodies. What that means is simultaneously, China has been basically emulating our former system, our most effective and constructive and productive patent system. They've got laws on their books that look more like ours circa 40 or 50 years ago. This should be scary to anybody who's concerned about losing our competitive edge. It's competitive at the moment, but it is a competition, a vigorous competition. We're not really playing to win. We're kind of dialing it in. China is playing to win. So that has tons of ramifications for our country, for our livelihoods, everything, even the nature of the technologies we have available to use.
So does that mean that their patent laws are mirroring what we do, what we patent and approve here in the States, they too do in China? Is that what that means?
Yes, they've adopted a lot of the framework and the laws as they were on the books here over recent years, before we started letting things slide. For instance, there's a law on the books signed into law in 1980, a bipartisan bill and now a law called the Bayh-Dole Act. Senators Bayh and Dole wrote that law. It took advantage of the property rights, individual property rights of our patent system, and allowed universities that get research grants from the federal government. Previous to Bayh-Dole, the federal government owned like 40,000 patents, and about 5% were commercialized. I mean, a lot of knowledge that could be taken advantage of that's sitting on a shelf in a government warehouse, basically. So the Bayh-Dole Act enabled universities, research entities that are doing basic research under federal grants to any patentable inventions out of that as a result of that research grant are now able to decide for themselves. It democratized the patent right of those kinds of inventions, those emanating from federal grants. So universities are, they're at the core of a lot of startup activity, startup businesses around new inventions. Bayh-Dole changed things dramatically. It's been called one of the most eventful laws of the 20th century.
We're on with James Edwards, and he's been featured in and is the incredible resource for creators of the film Innovation Race and the founder, the executive director of Conservatives and Property Rights and pretty much all things patent. James, you and I were talking a second ago. Unless you're an inventor, there's a lot about patents that you just don't know. Why would you? If I want to patent something, I'll pay the money. And then the government says, okay, and then they stamp their approval, and then it's just like, okay, fine, you're patented. Congratulations, two thumbs up. So it sounds like there's a little bit more into this.
There is. One of the biggest things is, what is patent eligible subject matter? And over the course of the past several years, patent eligible subject matter, which was it's written very broadly in the law. And for many years, it was the courts read it as broad. But their courts have been creating these exceptions to patent eligibility. So things that previously were patentable in America are no longer patentable in America. But the unfortunate thing is they remain patentable in our competitor country, other nations that are our competitors. So we're at a disadvantage. I mean, that's just one example. There are many others.
Got it. Well, you're a resource for the creators of the film Innovation Race. Where did the connection come with those two?
Well, I started working on patent issues as a legislative aide in the Senate and the House of Representatives. So I was thrown into it from that standpoint. I needed to understand it. At one point, it was just simply for a member who was not on the committee, but also I worked for a senator who was on the committee when this stuff was bubbling up. For a House member, I was his legislative director, and he was on the Judiciary Committee, which is responsible for the patent issues. So I had to really get to know the issue. And then afterwards, after leaving Capitol Hill, doing work for clients, organizations that are in this space, and included like U.S. Business and Industry Council, which is a business organization that represents manufacturers, small American manufacturers and middle-sized manufacturers who are patent dependent in their business model. That's their secret sauce, is their inventions. So that's where I got into it, and it just has grown from there.
James, we covered a few things regarding patents today. How does that connect with our faith, and how do we get plugged in?
Sure. Well, let me start with the faith part. Obviously, anybody who reads the Bible, who believes in the Lord and Scripture, understands from what Scripture teaches is, I mean, it starts on page one of Genesis 1:1. God is the creator, right? And then it goes all the way through many references throughout Scripture, but also in Revelation. What's God doing at the end times When it's all said and done, God's creating again. I mean, he's creating the new heavens and the new earth. So, you know, past the end of human time, God's still creating. So God's a creator. He endows human beings, his image bearers, with creative faculties. Some of us are more scientifically and mathematically creative, engineers and so forth. Others of us are more fine arts creative, you know, painting and sculpture and music. But every human being has that God-given spark for innovation or creativity. The other thing is important too, and that's seen similarly in scripture from start to finish, and that is God's ownership. God owns what he makes. He says, the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof in Psalms. And then there's, you know, God owns the cattle on a thousand hills. And throughout scripture references to God's ownership of what he's made. He also endows human beings with the inherent right to own things, own property. And that includes the property that is newly created by your application of your intellectual faculties, your mental faculties, and scientific and mathematical and other faculties. So you create something, some invention, that belongs to you, whether you get a patent on it or not. That's new property. It did not exist before. It's yours and nobody else's. So creativity and ownership, both the ultimate of the creator, God, but also he blesses us with those two the faculties and rights. So it's important to keep that in mind. And that kind of guides me to say, you know, every inventor, whether they're Christian or not, under God's common grace, gets to serve mankind, improve society, improve life, save lives by way of just doing their creative thing. And that leads to human flourishing, which means there may be monetary and economic benefit out of it. There may be little of that, but in any event, you are, you know, there's some value and some reward of some nature of your just the fact that you came up with something that works that nobody else had ever thought of.
Yeah. James, are the rules different if you're someone who's like a first-time inventor compared to, let's say, Apple or Microsoft?
The rules are the same. I mean, it's the same criteria in assessing and evaluating the patent application. It's the same for Microsoft. It's the same for any other company, a large established manufacturer, say a drug company or a car company. But it's also the same for the garage inventor. Everybody is equal in that respect. So that's how the little guy, if patents work correctly as they used to, has a chance to start a new create a new market for a new line of products or new type of product and compete with the big guys. That's how it's supposed to work, and it has worked. And we've let that kind of slip away a bit. There is one thing I should mention for small inventors, and there are some breaks on the fees. So the fees are a little bit more accessible for little guys.
What are the challenges?
Well, we've seen, we talked a minute ago about changes removing what previously was considered patent eligible subject matter is no longer patentable in our country. So eligibility is one. There's the ability to gain an injunction. So you prove in court that someone is infringing your patent, your invention, but you don't have ready access anymore. The courts have made it harder for getting an injunction against them, i.e. to stop the infringer, the proven infringer, from continuing to benefit from ill-gotten gains of what their thievery is allowing them. So that's a huge thing. And then another main problem is something that was enacted in a law in 2011. And the America Invents Act created a quasi-judicial administrative panel in the Patent and Trademark Office. So the very body, the Patent and Trademark Office, that examines and grants the patent, issues the deed to the property that you came up with, is the same entity that it has a panel now that invalidates patents through patent challenges, by who's an infringing company. And so infringers win the vast majority of the time. The Patent Trial and Appeal Board is what it's called. The Patent Trial and Appeal Board, or PTAB, invalidates 84% of the patent claims that are challenged before it. That's in contrast to federal court. In federal court, it's about 30 or 35%. So that's reasonable and understandable. Yeah, there are going to be, it's a human endeavor, so there are going to be some things issued as patents, or at least some claims on an invention that aren't really patentable upon further examination. The difference is there's due process and rule of law in real courts, and there's bias in the system at the PTAB.
Wow. And you mentioned before that the new rules, they're being implemented rather quickly.
Oh, they're implemented. They're already implemented as of about 2014. Wow. This has been, and it just gets uglier and uglier, the fact that more and more comes out. The patent judges, the so-called judges, the quasi-judicial bureaucrats who are called administrative patent judges, there are many of them that have conflicts of interest. There's no ethical standard, as there is binding judges, real judges in court. There's no corresponding ethics standard that keeps them from participating in cases where they're conflicted, i.e. people who formerly worked for Apple or Google and other big infringers sit on the panel, and they will hear cases that involve patents from their former employer. Oh, and there's a revolving door aspect too. Many of them go back to those same employers. It's just abominable. But I mean, you look at the top 20 list of who bringing cases at PTAB. I mean, it's a who's who of big tech. So you've got Apple, Google, you know, FANG, as well as others. Then you've got national champions from foreign competitor countries like Samsung and LG from Korea, South Korea. You've got ZTE and Huawei from China. I mean, these are the top 20, Lenovo. I mean, they're bringing these cases against American patents and as I said, successfully wiping them, 84% of the patent claims out.
Got it.
These quasi-judicial bodies.
Got it. That makes sense, because all of us are so hooked onto our gadgets. Our gadgets in America, our gadgets in, let's say, Korea, our gadgets in China, gadgets in Japan, gadgets and all that. So, okay, understood.
They sell their things here and they want to.
yeah. Okay, understood. Well, you know what? I guess the last couple of questions I have for you yet is, number one, I think really understanding is the key to this whole thing, because sometimes it can be so legislative sounding and so judicial sounding. It's just like, what? What website can we go to better read and find out more things about it? And then is there a resource that we can better understand and help us digest and saturate?
There are quite a few. I'm going to mention a couple that will be helpful, I think, because you mentioned that I lead Conservatives for Property Rights. Mm-hmm. So on our website, we have things that we're involved in the patent legislative and policy battles. What that is property-rts.org. The word property-rts, as in rights, .org. We also are on Twitter and at the number 4 property rights, at 4 property rights.
Got it.
And we retweet as well as putting out our own stuff, what we're doing. We retweet a lot of great material from like Judge Paul Michel, the retired chief judge of the Federal Circuit. I mean, he's tremendous. Professor Adam Mossoff at George Mason University, U.S. in Startups and Innovators and Startups for Jobs material, the Innovation Alliance material, Heritage and Hudson Foundations. We put out all kinds of great material of others. We facilitate spreading that around. So that's a place to start.
On with James Edwards. He's a founder and the executive director of Conservatives for Property Rights. Also, he was a huge resource for the creators of the film Innovation Race. Now, where do we learn more about that movie?
InnovationRaceTheMovie.com. The film is available for streaming on the Salem service, Salem Now service. So two ways to get, if you want to go straight to the movie, Salem Now, and then for streaming. And this also can be connected through the Innovation Race, the movie.com.
And listeners, don't forget, we've had a lot of links thrown at you the past couple of minutes. So if there's any questions regarding anything that you listen to, send us a text. We'll get back with you first thing, 419-240-1937. James Edwards, it is so much fun. Everything we talked about. I feel smarter after this one.
Well, Chris, thank you for having me. It's been a great pleasure.